I'm Justin Lassick.
And I'm Mike Badalino.
And you're listening to 70s Big Radio.
Your friends on your drive to your 9 to 5.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the new 70s Big Radio show. It's a podcast that's going to come out every week or two. And we had some podcasts come out in 2011, 2012, but now we want to have a regular radio show that lets us discuss current events in the lifting world, the training world, and then also we'll get into question and answers on each episode. So we've got me as Justin, we got Mike over there, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be a horrendous time. We're going to have that horrendous time every week together. All right, so today we got some questions on tendon pain, the Texas method, and programming conditioning, kind of the basic stuff. But first, I want to talk to Mike about some of the competitions he's been doing.
Mike here, just talking about I did a Highlander, which is a combination Highland Games strongman here in Wichita Falls. Gant Grimes, you might remember him from Gant Does Barbecue a few years ago. So Gant puts that on once a year. This is the second year I've done it. So the Highlanders used to be a little more popular. They tried to do kind of like a structured thing with it. But now it's just, as far as I know, the only Highlanders is the one Gant does. So it's three strongman events and then three Highland Games events. And you choose from the, I believe, nine events in Highland Games. So this year it was a max axle clean and press, a yoke, Atlas stones, weight over bar, weight for distance, and Braemar stone. So that was fun. I mean,
Hold on. Wait, explain what each one, like the stone, like the Braemar stone, what are you doing with that?
Oh, man, it's just, I don't even know how many pounds it is, 22 pounds? I'm not all spun up on Highland Games, so correct me if I'm wrong here, a Highland Games enthusiast. But I think it was a little over 20 pounds, and then you throw it for maximum distance. It's a standing throw. You don't do any spins or anything like you do with a weight for distance. So the weight for distance is I believe it's 56 pounds. It's the same one that you use for the weight over bar. So the weight for distance, you can do spins, and you throw it as far as you can. And the weight over bar, you throw it as high as you can over a bar. Also with the 56-pound implement, it's pretty cool. I mean, you need to be fairly strong, and you need to be really explosive. So I'm not sure. I don't remember what my numbers were for it, but there was only one other heavyweight, so it was just a little bit of a tune-up competition for the strongman that I did last weekend.
Well, I got a question because I'm pretty sure everybody's sure wanting to know this. Two questions regarding the Highlander. First one: did you wear a kilt?
I did wear a kilt.
All right, and that's obviously necessary when doing any kind of Highlander games competition. Number two, did you drink beer?
I did not. I am a lightweight, despite being 285 pounds. I am definitely a lightweight. So no, I did not consume any alcohol.
Oh wait, I just thought of a third question too. Did Gant have any? Did he smoke any meat for the celebratory finish?
He did not, but Gant made a lot of sweet comments, and you know, just Gant's awesome and just fun to be around. So Gant made it a really fun day. Yeah. Even though for the second year in a row, it rains like 3 days a year in Wichita Falls, and it rained during the last Highlander, and it rained during this Highlander.
Well, figures.
Which is just absurd.
Yeah, so if you guys ever get a chance to learn from Gant, whether it's like going and hanging out at maybe one of the events he's putting on in Wichita Falls, or he does a few seminars, or getting to learn judo from him, he's an awesome coach, and he's a good guy, and I'm proud to call him a friend. He's a good dude. So then you did the strongman competition, so how was that?
Yeah, I did a strongman competition on the 5th, so it was last Saturday. Roger Ortmeier, Travis Ortmeier's dad, put it on. Roger is a master strongman competitor that I believe, I think he might be the oldest strongman competitor ever, at least in the who's a professional strongman, competed, you know, still competes. But Roger is, I think, 66, and he goes to Masters almost every year, and he's really strong. But he wanted to put, he's put on this competition in right outside of Houston in Cypress, Texas for the past 3 years. Since I'm not working right now, since I'm on terminal leave from the military, I had some time, so I drove down with Chris, and we went down to this competition. There were only four heavyweights, and all of us were, except for Trey, were pretty relatively about the same strength and experience level. So there was me, another guy named Mike, another guy named CJ, and Trey. Trey has never lost except for his first competition. So he's really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he needs to turn pro and stop doing amateur competitions so I have a chance to win. I almost beat him once, but then he did six reps with a 335 stone with no tacky, and I was like, see ya. There were my chances.
Yeah.
So it was a really good competition. It was really heavy. It started off with a 290 farmer's walk each hand for 50 feet and then a 550 sled drag, and the sled just did not move at all. It was terrible. I've never done a sled that was that difficult. So we're all pretty gassed after that. I think I took second in that. And then we did the Conan's wheel with 650, which I'm horrible at. You know, I did it just far enough so that I took third. After that, it was Fingles Fingers are definitely the coolest strongman event ever. They were a lot of fun. If you've never watched them, just type in Fingles Fingers on YouTube and you can check them out. They're basically big telephone poles that you flip. And if you watch the video on my YouTube, you can see Travis Ormeyer walk up and start yelling at me during the last Fingles Finger because I almost missed it, and I did it in the most difficult manner possible by slamming my shoulder into it because I had nothing left.
Yeah.
So I just kept slamming my shoulder into it until it eventually went over. And then after that, I really screwed up the keg toss. I got way too excited because I trained with a heavier keg, and they were lighter kegs, so I just got – my technique was way off. I didn't know I was going until like 5 seconds before I had to go, so I wasn't in the in the zone, if you will, at all.
Yeah, and that's basically you'll come with that stuff with time. It'll come in time because some of you may not know, Mike primarily has powerlifted up to this point, just raw powerlifting, and now he's transitioning and his goal is to earn a pro card in strongman. So still relatively new in the sport, and so you're gonna have to get used to all these competitions and everything.
Yeah, I've got a long way to go. My strength, I know that the main thing I need to work on is pressing. Other than that, I just need to get more efficient at everything. There are still a lot of really good amateurs. Trey is one of them, but there are there's just some guys that haven't turned pro yet that are really freaking good. Like Dimitar, who just turned pro like 4 months ago. Push press 505 the other day. See ya.
Yeah.
I mean that's exceptional, you know. And he also had a video this week where he was doing his, like, I guess it was like a volume squat day, and he high barred 635 for a jokingly easy triple, and then front squatted 495 like it was nothing. So
491.
Yeah. 495.
Oh, okay.
You know, and he just turned pro. But getting back to that competition, after that we had a wheelbarrow medley, which I'd never done. My buddy Cale Beck, who's a lightweight strongman, suggested that I should practice with farmer's walks when I'm tired, like at the end of a training session, and I tried that a couple times. So I think that really helped with the wheelbarrow. And I tore my first callus. You know, I have never torn a callus, and then I looked down at my hand afterwards, and I'm like, wow,
dude,
I actually tore a callus off.
You're basically a CrossFitter now.
Mm.
All right, and moving then, on. So what we got?
And then,
we got?
Well, one last thing. So, CJ, who the guy, he ended up taking second. Really, really strong. He just got done playing football in college. He totally shredded his hands. I've never seen kind of. If you looked at the picture of Misha Kokliev from Worlds this year,
yeah.
I think CJ's hands were actually worse than that. Like. All of his fingers, there was no skin left on him. It was like he had been flayed, like in A Song of Ice and Fire. Eh, Justin?
Yeah, that's right.
He was the flayed man. But yeah, I ended up taking third. I mean, Trey just destroyed everyone. He won almost every event. And then CJ and I were close for a while until I really screwed up the kegs. And then Mike was only like 1 or 2 points behind me. So it was a really good contest. I mean, I've got a long way to go before I turn pro, but strongman is fun as hell, and if you've never tried it, try it. If there's one close by and you're pretty strong and you have can try with some of the implements, just do it. So anyway, so let's talk about some things going on in the strength world. Justin, are you into weightlifting? Do you like the weightlifting?
I like to lift the weights every now and then. I'm here to lift some weights.
Do you like watching weightlifting?
No. Yeah, I do actually. I love walking.
Yeah, what weight class do you like?
I'd say, you know, I hate to say this, but you know, Dmitry Klokov is one of my favorite lifters, and I just want to point out that I liked him several years ago. Before, I'm basically a Klokov hipster because I liked him before it was cool to like him.
So you like, what about Bacon? I feel the same way about Bacon. I mean, I liked Bacon before everyone else said, man, Bacon's always been amazing.
Totally overblown. So these people are kind of ruining the Klokov love for me. But yeah, I like watching 94s. I like watching 105s. The super heavies are always impressive. I mean, 77s are always, everything's impressive. I don't really watch the lighter weight classes too much, but 77, 85, 94, 105s, I like watching that stuff.
So we've got the World Weightlifting Championships, which I believe is in Poland. That starts on the 16th and runs through the 27th. I could be wrong about those dates, but I know it's over the course of at least a week. But yeah, we've got some guys going from the U.S. I follow the Muscle Driver USA guys fairly closely, so I know that Travis Cooper, Morgan King, and James Tatum, I believe all three of them are going to Worlds. So that's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Obviously, best of luck to them. And then we've got some other U.S. lifters that obviously want to do well. Kane Wilkes is a super heavyweight that's really, really strong.
Yeah.
And then we've got a couple of other guys. I think Donovan Ford.
Said Chad Vaughn.
Chad Vaughn's still going.
And so Chad Vaughn, I want to say a quick thing. Chad Vaughn was at I've actually lifted most of my meets when I did compete a few years ago were all with Chad Vaughn almost, because we lifted in that in the Spoon Barbell meet that's down in like south of Wichita Falls in a barn, and Chad Vaughn has lifted in that one with me. I've lifted at Texas State. I think I bombed out of Texas State and Chad Vaughn was there. And then I saw him at Nationals and talked to him a little bit. And he's like 5'7" to 5'9". He's not incredibly tall, but his quads are that of a guy.
Ridiculous.
Guy that weighs like 220. And he's a 77 kilo lifter. His quads are
insane.
Yeah. It's like London broils that are just like stapled to the front of his leg. So yeah, Chad Vaughn, always happy to cheer him on, and he's what, 33 now?
Yeah, I was looking at the start list, and he's 33. So
yeah, so hopefully he can still keep putting the numbers up.
Pretty awesome for a guy that's already been in two Olympics, you know.
And then what do we got on TV? TV coming up with Strength Sports.
The World's Strongest Man, baby, starting on Wednesday, and Brian Shaw wins. Yeah, we're not so, obviously, you know, they're not. Everyone is contractually obligated at Worlds to not say who won. But they can't stop the fans from taking pictures of, oh, look, there's a guy on the podium. That looks like Brian Shaw. Yeah. He's holding a first-place trophy. Well,
thanks for
the spoiler. So we know that Brian Shaw wins. We've got a bunch of U.S. guys that are in the finals in Worlds, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's cool.
Man, nearly half of the guys in the finals are from the U.S. So that's pretty cool. That starts Wednesday on CBS. I think it's at 8 or 9 at night. I know Iron Mind had a full listing of all of the times for that, so that'll be running over the course of a week. And I'm sure that I'm hoping that HIT Strongman uploads them on YouTube, because that dude has uploaded every Strongman competition for the past 30 years, roughly. it's pretty insane, but yeah, hopefully he puts up World 2013 Worlds without any commercials. But enough banter. Let's do some questions, Justin.
Alrighty.
Ready? All right. So the first question we've got is from Michael T. Michael asks, how do you deal with forearm/bicep tendon pain while benching?
Right. And so
what do you think about that, Justin?
This is kind of it's always hard to answer specific individual questions, especially when we don't even see the guy, and we don't even see a picture of where his pain is, because even though he's specifying forearm bicep pain, it's like, if I was going to answer this directly to him, I'd want a picture with him pointing to it, and I'd ask him a bunch of questions. So generally speaking, when you guys send in questions, just keep in mind that the more information you can provide, the better. And we can always filter out that information when we read the question. But that being said, the first thing that comes to mind if this pain is coming from benching might be his mechanics in his bench. So that could start with his setup on the bench. That could his grip width could affect that. And particularly, I want to focus on the internal or external rotation of his shoulders, because the more he's internally rotated, which is essentially flaring the elbows out, then the more that it's going to pinpoint pain on like the point in his shoulder, which is the acromioclavicular joint, That area is where like the proximal or the upper biceps attachment comes in, and then the supraspinatus, which is one of the external rotators, it's on like the top portion of your scapula or your shoulder blade. That comes and attaches kind of in that same area on the pinpoint of your shoulder, like that bony portion where there is at the top of the deltoid and right where your trap comes into. So that's like the area of the acromioclavicular joint. So a lot of force can go into that area. And then also, like, if it's not really that area that's getting force, it can be that bicep area, especially if you're flaring. So the first thing I'd want to know is, like, what's his bench technique look like in his mechanics? Because if he's flaring his elbows, then that can usually put pain into his shoulder. But he's talking about more forearm bicep. So I'd have to assume he's doing some sort of weird, possibly even torquing at his wrist. Like, since he's flaring his elbows, it might be kind of, like, pronating his forearm a bit as he's doing it and putting maybe, like, some pain on his brachioradialis, which is like the thumb side. If you're doing hammer curls, you're working your brachioradialis, and then maybe that point which the biceps comes and crosses the elbow. So that'd be the kind of stuff I'd bring to his attention. So like, you can treat the symptoms, but then you have to treat the cause. The symptoms would be like doing mobility work on that area, but the cause is going to be his mechanics, unless there's something else in his life or his training that's going on to affect that area. So you have anything to add to that?
The only other thing is that, you know, perhaps if he's low bar squatting, there might be a technical issue that's, you know, resulting in pain in that area.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, something weird that he's doing with the bar position, where his elbows are, if he's letting the bar kind of, if he's, you know, utilizing his forearms and his biceps to kind of press into the bar, you know, there's probably going to be some pain resulting from that. So it could be a technical issue,
yeah,
with another lift.
That's true. And so that's a good point. I forgot about that right now. But so that could mean that if his shoulder mobility sucks and he's in a low bar position where it's putting him in a compromised shoulder position, then it could definitely resonate down if that weight's pushing down into the elbow. Because I think you had something like that going on a few years ago when I first met you. So like,
yeah,
that,
I did.
That stuff can definitely happen. So maybe a catch-all, or like a general approach, is going to be hit up like five-way shoulder with a band and just work on overall shoulder mobility, and then pay attention to other lifts.
All right. Our next question comes from Elliot M., and Elliot is asking, someone had a good question in the PR Friday post yesterday. What sort of difference do you expect between a 1RM and Texas Method volume 5x5 or 3x5? And TM intensity 3RM or 5RM on the bench, on the squat? I believe you've said it would be a relatively small difference for female trainees, more for male. What do you think about that, Justin?
Well, basically, he's asking what the discrepancy should be between your volume work and your intensity work. And so
yes.
3RM and 5RM, that means 3 rep max, 5 rep max, and TM is just an abbreviation for Texas Method. So in the book, I have two books on the Texas Method if you're relatively new to 70s Big. And the first one talks about like the general program. And the general program is that you do a volume day early in the week and you do an intensity day late in the week. And it's more of an intermediate program to shift into after you start a linear progression. And so his question is like, what should the amount of weight be between what you do on volume day and what you do on intensity day? Because back before I wrote the book, some people were out there saying that you should just push your volume day and your intensity day up and just push them hard. And then even if you're pushing the volume day, you're still getting stronger despite your intensity day not increasing. And the book primarily says, well, no, that's not good, because that's not even the case. Because if you just keep pushing your volume day, you're just putting an incredible amount of systemic stress on your body, and that's the reason why your intensity today is not increasing. So if we have a guy that's fucking doing, 350 for 3 or 5 sets of 5 on Monday, and he's only doing like 385 of his intensity today, that's only 30 pounds, and that's not that much. That's not much. He's not getting much out of his volume day on his intensity day. So the first book that I put out was trying to say, hey, volume is like a variable that is we can control very carefully. And so in the book, I said that the volume day shouldn't really go above like 80% of the intensity day. You know, like it's not a hard rule. It's kind of more of like a general thing, because in a book, you have to give people like set quantified standards to adhere to. And so in there, I said kind of 80%. So like a guy, whatever he does on volume day, He wouldn't want to creep above 80 or 85% on his volume day for what he's doing on his intensity day, because that would mean he's doing something too stressful on his volume day, which is going to inhibit his ability to recover and therefore have a quality intensity day. In other words, lift more weight, because in this system, my opinion and what's worked really well for all of us is that the more you get out of your intensity day, you come in and kick the door down and fucking hit really heavy triples, excuse me, heavy tripos, and then doubles and so on. That's going to be where your worth is in the Texas method type structure. So 80%, and then even like females kind of get into like, they can get up 85 or 90%. So a guy wouldn't want to get more than 85% of his intensity today. And note that I'm not talking 85% of his one rep max. I'm talking about 85% of what he's doing on his intensity day. His volume day would need to be around there. So that's kind of the parameters I set it for people. And the reason females have a higher percentage is because they are less neuromuscularly efficient, meaning that they are not going to be able to recruit all their motor units, which are all the muscle fibers. It's all the motor neurons and all the muscle fibers that it innervates. It basically is saying like, we're going to activate all the muscle fibers and they're going to put out 100%. But a female can't put out 100% of her activation of her muscles because of the hormonal difference. It's a gender thing. So that's why their volume days are typically going to be greater than a guy's will be in the Texas method. So hope that answers Elliot's question. You got anything else to add to that, Mike?
Yeah, just real quick, personal experience. I remember when Chris and I were training at Powerhouse while we were waiting for my squat rack to get finished. I did 470 on the squat for 8 triples on Tuesday. And, man, it took me like at least 2 hours to get everything done. I was exhausted by the time it was over. And then I came back Saturday, and I barely got 525 for a single. So clearly that is an example of pushing your volume day way too hard, and then you get nothing out of your intensity.
Yeah, when I was doing around upper 400s, like 490 to 500 on my intensity day, I think my volume day was around 430 or 440, 450 at the most. And yeah. I was doing, I think at that time I was still doing like 5 sets of 5. But the more you, basically, you want your volume to be as low as you can, because you want to have the least amount of dose of volume to get the most intensity. And so in the book, I talk about increasing that discrepancy. And so the rule of thumb I put in the book is that you increase your volume, I'm sorry, you increase your intensity day 3 times, like for 3 weeks in a row before increasing your volume day. So like if you're doing, if you're doing 405 on your volume and you're doing like 465 or something on your intensity day, you would go to 470, 475, and 480. And then depending on how difficult those were, that's when you would actually increase your volume to try and stimulate more of to try and have a little bit more stress to keep stimulating that intensity day to continue adapting and moving up.
Excellent. Good question, Elliot. I'm sure a lot of people have that. The next question is from Sam C. Sam is currently in the British military with certain fitness standards. One of them is the beep test. Wondering how you can program conditioning into the Texas method. The beep test is basically a shuttle test over 20 meters with the beeps getting faster and faster. You require a level 10. I've read before about conditioning on Saturdays after intensity day. Would you make Saturday-specific conditioning for the beep test?
And this is kind of one of those situations where creating a program for someone is more individualistic. It has to do with their all kinds of variables: their height, weight, their body fat, their age. You know, he's in the military, so he might have PT during the week that's scheduled, and then he might train outside of it. He might have X amount of days to actually train, but we do know that he's doing a Texas method. So let's kind of talk about that generally, and that is he's talking about putting it on Saturday after the intensity day, and really he can drop it in wherever. So he's either doing a 3-day-a-week program or a 4-day-a-week program. And if he's doing a 3-day-a-week program, really I'm just going to say that any one of those days you can do your conditioning, because training for the shuttle run is not like, when you're doing it, it sucks and you're doing the test, but it's not incredibly difficult. Like you're basically just going to be sprinting with rest. You're sprinting back and forth. You might go down and back and rest. And that's really all the test is. And so he can basically, if he had the ability, like he had the energy to do it after his volume day, he could do it then. He could do it on the day between his volume and his light day, because let's say he's doing Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Tuesday, he could do conditioning, because his light day is not going to be stressful anyway. And the only day I'd really say to not do anything is the day before his intensity day, because we want to have a full day of rest before the intensity day, because that's the most important day. So, yeah, he can do it on, well, his intensity day is on Saturday, but he can do it on Saturday after his intensity day. Or wait, he's asking if you do it the day after your intensity day. And that's fine.
Oh, sorry. On Saturdays after intensity. Yeah, I think he's saying, I think he wants to do it like after he finishes his intensity.
Yeah, regardless, if his intensity day is Friday or Saturday, he could do it the day of, or he could do it the day after. I don't have a problem with him doing shuttle testing, like doing shuttle training, any of the fucking days of a 3-day week. And same thing for the 4-day week program, which that's the split template, and that's in the second book. It's called the Texas Method Advanced, and that's just taking the normal program and basically turning it into an advanced program that has some speed work and kind of rotating intensity days a certain way. But regardless if he's doing 4 days a week or 3 days a week, he can train on his training days, and then he can train between his volume and his light day and do the conditioning day in that day in between, because that would give an opportunity to still rest before his intensity day, which is what's most important when you're doing the Texas method.
The only thing I would have to add with that is that I'm not sure how difficult this test is for Sam. So that would also depend on, I mean, really how hard he needs to push it. I mean, if this test is really easy for him, he might not have to train it as often. You know, if he has a lot of trouble with it and if he fails, he gets kicked out of the military, then yeah, he probably has to put more emphasis on it. And, you know, maybe around test time there is a he needs to throttle back a little with the training and just make sure that he passes his beep test. But again, I don't know a ton about Sam, so, you know, without knowing that, he just needs to know how important it is for him to train for this test.
Yeah, it's a good point, because just to say it real quick, like, Mike is getting out of the military, but he would have to change his training because he's a bigger guy. He'd have to change his training just to prepare for a PT test. And so if Sam has to do that, then that's what you got to do, because you got to keep your job and you can't get in trouble at work. So you could even put your conditioning at the beginning of your training days, especially the light day. But basically, just don't do it the day before the intensity day.
The next question is from Leah P., and it's for me. How much can Mike Badalino eat in a day? And I think this question is in reference to me hanging out with Ben Big Arms Claridad in California when I went to visit him last month and hang out with him for a week. And the three of us went out to eat for all-you-can-eat sushi one day and consumed a massive amount of sushi. But I don't know. I don't know. I've never really pushed how much I can eat in a day. I normally eat a lot. I eat around 2 pounds of meat a day. That's cooked weight. And then I eat, you know, a bunch of other fruit and vegetables and potatoes and rice. And, you know, I make a shake in the morning with egg beaters. So I eat – I think I want – you know, one of these days I calculated out. It was about 4,500 calories, so – I don't know how much I could eat, but I have a lot of respect for those guys that do professional eating competitions, because that's a serious amount of food, and I would never mess with that. I'm not on that level.
What was that place? Anyway. What was that place we went to in the 2012 Arnold? It had the big burger that was on
the Food Network. Thurman's Cafe or Thurman's? Yeah.
And then we showed up and. They were talking about, they had this big burger, and they were like, it was like a big deal to eat it and stuff. And so I'm sitting at a different table with Chris, and by the way, Chris was bouncing his pecs to the beat of whatever song was on. And Ellie, who is now his girlfriend, was just delighted. She was extremely delighted at his pec bouncing. So we were waiting there, and we were waiting on our order. And Mike came over to our table, and I was like, hey, what'd you order? And he told us what he ordered, which was, what was it called? It was like their main...
The Therminator.
Yeah, it was supposed to be this big deal. And I was like, oh, sweet. You know, have you gotten it yet? And he was like, yeah, I'm done. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, I'm done eating it. It took me 6 minutes. And it was supposed to be this thing that's like difficult to eat, and Mike like crushed it in 6 minutes. And so I don't think that people understand that Mike can eat a lot. Like, would you say you ate a friggin' gallon of ice cream when you were with Ben one day for dinner?
Yeah, we when I was at when I trained when I benched with the super training guys, and then I trained a little bit more after that when I was in Sacramento. I hadn't really eaten a whole lot because, you know, it was kind of Ben has a pretty busy day. You know, he's training people at the gym and training himself, so I would only eat, you know, when I was able to. So we hadn't eaten, and Ben is like, "Man, we need to try this place, Leatherby's." And we went to this this ice cream place, Leatherby's. And God, I love ice cream. I love ice cream. So I went there and I was like, "What's the biggest thing you have?" And they said, "Man, I really wish I remember what the name was. I took a picture of it." And they said, "If you can finish it," and gosh, the time was absurd, and I don't even believe it. They said, "If you can finish it in 2 minutes," it was either 2 or 3 minutes, then you get it for free, and you break the record. But there was no way. I mean, I have a hard time believing that you'd be able to swallow that quantity of ice cream and syrup and whatever else was on there in that time period. I ate it at a relatively decent pace, and I think it took me 10 minutes. But I hadn't eaten really all day, and I had benched a ton, and I was so hungry. And I finished in about 10 minutes, and Ben was blown away. I mean, he took a video of me savoring it because he just enjoyed the experience that much.
Yeah, because so. It was like
just watching me is fun.
It's a gallon of ice cream. Jesus Christ.
It was at least a gallon of ice cream. Yeah, it was a lot.
All right. What do we have up next?
Scott Jason S. asks, how would you differentiate between an injury and simply prolonged pain, external symptoms, or a certain time frame?
Okay, so Mike and I were talking about this earlier. We were kind of doing some show prep, and we kind of have different things to say about it. I mean, the obvious thing, Mike, go ahead and like say what you were talking about earlier. What's the obvious thing that you should be concerned about?
The obvious thing is, I mean, if you're doing, let's say you have shoulder pain when you press. So you've got some shoulder pain like nagging throughout the day. You go into the gym, you warm up a little bit, you do some mobility, and you start pressing. It just feels the exact same. I mean, it's not, you know, you might not be in excruciating pain the entire set, but you have, you know, a baseline, man, my shoulder kind of hurts throughout the whole set. Well, my question is, does it get worse? I mean, throughout the sets, by the end of the training session, I mean, are you on the ground because you're in so much pain? When you wake up the next morning, can you not move your arm? That would be, you know, the difference between maybe something that's acute and something that's, you know, chronic, something that's, you know, been going on for months. Every time I press, the next morning when I wake up, I can't move my arm.
Right.
Okay? So, if that's the issue, you probably need to see someone.
So basically, you know? If it's debilitating, like it could be
debilitating
to your actual training, and it could be debilitating
or to your life.
To your life,
you know,
because some people have jobs in which they have to physically be capable of doing their job. So that would if it's debilitating to that, then obviously something needs to change. So prolonged pain and injury, like a prolonged pain is an injury. Like it just depends on how it's developed. And so Mike was kind of touching on whether something is an acute or chronic thing, and that's a big deal, because when you have an acute instance of something, like you tweak something in your back while you're front squatting or deadlifting or something, that's an acute instance of something. But if something develops over time, that's going to be chronic, and that's going to be, it's almost always related to a mechanical fault in what you're doing on a regular basis. And that could be related to other things, but it's going to be a mechanical fault probably in your lifting or your training. But that mechanical fault there's a reason that it's happening, whether it's a muscular imbalance. Usually it's a mobility limitation, meaning that like if I'm sitting down for 8 hours a day, my psoas, which is a hip flexor, gets shortened. That's spelled PSOAS if you want to look it up, the psoas. Your rectus femoris is another hip flexor that's getting shortened. And so your hip flexors are shortened, and then you're hyperlordotic. There's an article I wrote that explains hyperlordosis and stuff on the site if you look that up. So if you're hyperlordotic and you have shortened hip flexors and you can't get full extension in your hips for maybe the Olympic lifts, or you just have crunchy like anterior hip capsules and stuff, and you're not able to externally rotate as well because you're tight there, then that's not, and then your knees come in on the squat. Like, that would be okay, knees are coming on a squat and we need to correct that, but I just explained a bunch of shit that would be mobility related that causes or facilitates the knees coming in on a squat. So that's something that is chronic, and it has a lot of stuff, because you can treat the symptoms of your pain being in this one particular area, but then you have to look at what is causing it. And it's not just mechanics, because something is having to do with those mechanics, whether it's muscular imbalance or mobility limitation. On the other side of the spectrum, we've got acute injury. And acute injury is like when you have that fucking moment when you're lifting, or you like are bending over and you yank something. And that's going to be when you go through a rehab process. But keep in mind that those can also be affected by your mechanics and by your mobility. So that's why it's so important that we talk a lot about maintaining or improving mobility on the website. And then obviously I'm really big on using quality mechanics, whether we're talking about conditioning workouts, strength training, or even when we're going up heavy weight. I want to see someone hit a squat PR with proper external rotation in their hips, proper hip drive if they're low barring, proper activation of like the hips and not just the quads in a high bar squat. I want to see quality reps and not just moving the bar from point A to point B, regardless if we're talking strength training or conditioning. So you can always, regardless of where the pain is or how it developed, you want to look at mechanics and you want to look at mobility, because mobility has a significant and profound effect on mechanics. So differentiating between injury and just pain, like it's important to do that, because you need to know, okay, this is debilitating, therefore I shouldn't train on it because I don't want to make it worse, or can I train through this pain? But there's a reason you have pain. Being hard-headed and just training because you're hurt, or sorry, training because you're in pain, like, yeah, sometimes you have to train through pain, especially if you have a goal, a competitive goal that you're working towards. But at the same time, there is something causing that pain. You just don't have pain for no reason. Don't let anybody tell you that it's okay just to be hurting all the time, because that's not the case. It means you've done something wrong, which means you've neglected to do something like mobility work or improving your mobility before that session, or just hydrating properly or resting properly, whatever. So I think that the differentiation between injury and just pain is arbitrary, because either way, you're going to have to diagnose the issue and start working on why it's there. You have anything to add, Mike?
No, man, that sounds good to me. I'm sure a lot of people had a similar question to that, so thank you for that question. Jay has two questions for us, so let's start with the first one. The first question is, how to tell if an injury to the inguinal region is a hernia when common signs and symptoms of said hernia are not present? So in this case, there's no he doesn't have insurance, MRIs and doctor visits are out, or if it's a strain of some kind. So how to figure out if it's a hernia?
Well, I didn't do any research on this particular question, which if I was answering Jay directly, he's a buddy of ours, then I would probably do a little bit of research. But the first thing that I would say is that if he has looked up what signs and symptoms of a hernia are and he doesn't see those, then the first thing I would suspect, assuming that's the case, would be some sort of groin or even hip flexor issue going on. So I would look at his psoas, but also the iliacus attaches on the inside of the iliac crest, and the iliac crest is just like that side of, basically like from your hip bone going back, like it's attaching on the inner wall of that, so it's coming down and attaching in the same way on like the, I guess you can kind of say like the medial or posterior aspect of the femur a little bit. So basically the psoas and the iliacus, they come down and they're often called together the iliopsoas, and they come down and they attach on the femur and they help pull the femur up towards the pelvis. So they're hip flexors. But when you're externally rotated, they also have a little bit of tension on them when you're in a squat and stuff. So the first thing I'd look at is like something down in that region, because or just even like an abdominal strain. So I'd look at some of those things that you can kind of palpate and work on. And a resource that's really good for diagnosing weird placed injuries is called the Trigger Point Therapy Workbook. And if you Google or you look that up on the site 70s Big, I've talked about this book before. It's called the Trigger Point Therapy Workbook. I have the second edition. It's by Claire Davies. Basically, you can go in and you can go to a body part area and you can start looking where pain areas are, and then you can start looking at areas you can work on. And it teaches you how to palpate not only palpate, but to work on these areas. So like working the psoas, what body position you need to get in. And it was one of the things that helped me work on a psoas issue. And I have a video of that. And I've also have a post about that if you search psoas on 70s Big. So I'd say to Jay, you know, start looking to see what pain referred pain areas there are and what you can work on. And then don't rule out inguinal hernia, because that's fucking bad news. This is all assuming that he has ruled that out, and I can't speak for him if he has or not, because hernias that are below the inguinal ligament are very bad, because they can start messing with your testicles and shit like that. So first thing is, like, if you have to go and get it checked out, it's better than fucking having something happen to your ball sack. You have anything to add, Mike?
Very true. No, that sounds good to me. His second question is about squatting before or after deadlifting, which is preferred if he's running 5-3-1. Wanting to add a second day of squatting, lighter volume, but after pulling, I admittedly don't feel like doing it at all, and therefore do not. So just real quick, I'll touch on this and then let Justin talk about it. Chris hurt himself back in June. He hurt his back. He's not entirely sure what he did, but his chiropractor thought it was a disc injury. So what Chris did was he squatted relatively heavy. I don't remember quite the percentages. I think it was maybe approaching 90, but it was somewhere between 80 and 90. And then he was working up for deadlifting. And he was getting ready for nationals, and we had just finished doing the Clydesdale games. So he was basically trying to quickly get his stuff together for nationals. And Chris ended up hurting himself pulling 550, which for him, 550 is not that high of a percentage relative to, you know, his max, because yeah, Chris pulled 700,
yeah,
700 on multiple occasions, you know, and high 600s on a lot of other occasions. So, you know, Chris is always good for between 675 and 700. So 550 shouldn't be, you know, it's a chump change for him. However, that's how Chris hurt himself. So yesterday, Chris and I were talking about his new program that he's going to be starting doing this week. And, you know, and I told him to be, and I was kind of looking at what he was doing on Saturday, and he was considering squatting and deadlifting, both at a relatively high intensity. You know, intensity being a percentage of your one rep max. So I told him, I was like, look, dude, you know, you need to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, that's how you hurt yourself. So, you know, depending on, you know, what I'm guessing that because it's 5-3-1, so, you know, 1 week it's a five rep max, then three, then one, then he's going to be deadlifting heavy, and then he wants to be squatting afterwards. Well, you know, if you are going to be squatting after you've already deadlifted, you know, just be careful about, especially volume. And, you know, if you're thinking about something like 5x5 in a relatively high intensity, you know, that's that could be stressful enough to cause, you know, an injury. You're gonna be tired after pulling a one rep max, you know, deadlift, and your mechanics might be a little bit off when you're squatting. So, you know, that's why when the only time I've ever really squatted and deadlifted the same day is when I'm either, you know, like yesterday I deadlifted heavy and then I front squatted. You know, and that doesn't seem to tighten up my back to the degree that, you know, deadlifting and then squatting heavy would, you know, do, or vice versa. So if you're doing that second day of squatting, maybe consider putting it on a different day, or, you know, keep both of them relatively light. I don't know. Justin, what do you think here?
Well, it's all good stuff, because at this point in Chris's development as a lifter, he definitely doesn't need to be squatting and pulling heavy. That's kind of more of like a novice type thing, or someone that's doing more of a linear progression. And in fact, the advanced Texas method.
Jay's running 5-3-1 here, so.
Yeah, and in the advanced Texas method stuff, which is what we kind of had Chris running for a long time, that got him, that really pushed his stuff up after he was stagnant for a while. We alternate, like, 1 week is going to be heavy squat on the intensity, and the next week is heavy deadlift. And like when they're doing heavy squat, they're doing like speed deadlifts, and when they're doing heavy deadlift, they're speed squatting. And that works for a while, but it's kind of like run its course for Chris, because he's getting, I mean, he's like pulling over 700 at meets, and so he got hurt, of course. So so the way that he was structuring his program was such that it set him up to get hurt on something that was very light. And so those are all good points. I would say that for someone, especially someone like Jay, because Jay's come to one of my seminars before. I've coached Jay. I've talked to him regularly for a few years. He plays fantasy football with me, so I know Jay. And I know that he's had some issues in his glute before, in his hip, and all that kind of shit. And basically my first reaction is, in general, I don't want to see people squatting after deadlifting unless it's like super light, like just technique work just to get it done type squatting. And that just means like, if a person's going to squat 100 times in the next year, that's going to be better than if they only squat 50 times in the next year. So sometimes like that's just getting work in, just because that accumulated work over time is going to be significant. But in Jay's instance here, I would also agree with Mike that squatting after deadlifting is going to be bad news bears for him. And I would say that if he wants to do some squatting, I would not even have him do volume squatting, because the nature of 5-3-1 is such that it has lower volume than something like the Texas method. It's a good program for specific types of situations, and it's good because it doesn't put a lot of volume stress on people, and it kind of sticks to using it as relative intensities over the course of a month to garner progress. And in this case, if he wants to get more squatting than just doing it once a week, I would just have him squat light before the deadlifting. And also, I don't know why, but I like pairing front squatting with deadlifting, and it might be because it's less...
Me too. I do too.
It's less stressful, and it might be because there's less muscular stress on the hips, and because you're going to need the hips and the lower back to be not as fatigued for deadlifting well. And, you know, some people probably like with short torso, someone like Mike with long femurs and short torso, they might have a lot of like thoracic back work, thoracic musculature, having to really keep the back extended while they're front squatting. So some people might feel that the middle or upper back gets fatigued from front squatting. But again, he's not going to be squatting a lot here. I'm saying he should stick to lighter stuff, and at most a 3x5 of whatever the fuck he's squatting, and to do it first and not do it after he's deadlifting.
There you go, Jay. Hopefully that'll help you out. All right, next question is from Andres M. He's got a question about the Texas method. He's been running it for a couple months for squats and push press. So far, volume days are fine, intensity days are hit and miss. I'm a firefighter, so sleep and recovery is shaky. What strategy would you recommend given my circumstances? Also, hypertrophy has improved noticeably, but strength is lagging. What am I doing wrong? I'd like it to be the other way around. Let me know if you need any more details. So yeah, I think in this situation, more details would be good. But Justin, what do you think with what he's given us to work with?
I think this will be our last question of the show. We're gonna have a little bit to say about this one. First off, I always like to try and help the guys that have to have a job in which their physicality is important for their job. And so he's a firefighter, and his sleep and recovery are shaky. That's kind of a red flag right there. Like, if shit just sucks and he can't sleep better and he can't recover better because of his job, then it's just something he has to deal with. But if we can, I'd like to see him say, okay, what is it about sleep and recovery that is problematic? Is it just that you're not managing your time during the day and you're not getting to sleep earlier? Is it that when you get home from your long shift and you get to see your wife or something, that you're wanting to see her and you don't get to bed on time? That I can understand something like that. But what can we do to improve the sleep and recovery that are there? Like, can you hydrate more? Can you get, like, if he's not hitting protein requirements, like, I'd want him to hit at least 1 gram per pound of body weight and then add 50 pounds on top of that. Again, that's 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight and then add at least 50 grams on top of that. If he's not getting that amount, then I would say hit that amount. If he has to fucking take 75 grams a day through whey protein to try and hit that amount, I'm fine with that. Usually I only like guys to get 50 grams of protein through whey protein a day. But if he has to put more in, that's fine. Like, so if he can improve his recovery, then let's hit that up. That's thing number one. So he's using it for squats and push press. And then I'd want to know how he's running the program. Like, if his volume day is too high, then that's going to inhibit his intensity work. And so it's kind of going back to what we talked earlier in the show, that if his volume day is creeping up too high and he's not getting much of his intensity day, then the first thing I would say is, let's drop the volume back. Sometimes with guys, if they're doing a 5x5, I'll say, all right, let's drop two sets of that off and just do a 3x5 at the same amount of weight and see how that goes for a few weeks. Because it's not going to be like he gets immediate effect. It might have to be like the effect of doing that for 1 to 3 weeks, you know. Because if he's doing too much work and not recovering, that accumulates over the course of several weeks, and now he's in a deficit of recovery, and then he gets to the point where he's not performing well. So It's interesting that he's like, I'm building muscle, but my strength is not improving. So that means he's sort of on the right track, but I would look to the program itself as how it's being structured. Because most guys, when they see Texas Method on the internet, they're like, all right, I'll fucking do this 5x5 and then 1x5 on intensity day, 5x5 volume and one set of five on the intensity day. And what we've actually found is that's not the best way to run it. And that's not how I like people to run it. And that's why the first book, Texas Method Part 1, it talks about, like, pretty much don't do as much volume and use a 3x5 on that volume day instead of a 5x5 because it fucking works better. If a dose of X gets what you want, then why do 4X or why do X squared? Like, why do a significant more of a dose of strength training if only a small amount will work? So if he can get the same progress with a lower volume, that's what I want him to do, and that's what we talked about earlier. What are you thinking so far, Mike?
The only thing that I would add is that, you know, if he, let's say he's doing his volume on Tuesday and his intensity Saturday, you know, he's a firefighter, so things are going to be changing a lot. Let's say Tuesday he gets his volume in, he gets some rest, and then he thinks he's going to be doing his intensity Saturday. However, all of a sudden he's got to work Saturday. Well, do it on Friday. You know, if you have to move your days around from week to week, probably 24 hours might make a difference for some people, but maybe for Andres it won't. I've got to go to a wedding next Saturday. I can't train Saturday, so I have to train Friday. That 24 hours, just I'll try to maybe throttle it back a little bit Thursday, but you know, move your days around if you need to accommodate your schedule. Especially when you're a firefighter, you know, your schedule is going to be hectic. Your schedule might not always be super structured. So, you know, maximize your ability to recover. Do it a day early, do it a day late if you need to, but, you know, get the work in and recover as well as you can by eating more, like Justin said.
Yeah, when I was traveling with actually at Ripito's gym, and I was doing the we were doing the CrossFit seminars. Sometimes we would leave on a Thursday, and normally my intensity day would be on a Friday. So normally my schedule was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But if there was a day I was leaving on Thursday, I would do my volume on Monday. I'd do my light day on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. I'd have Wednesday off, and then Thursday I'd wake up a little earlier and do my intensity day, and then fucking go out of town, you know, for 4 days or whatever. So in that instance, you bump the light day up, and then you bump the intensity up, but you always have a day off before. Mike's program is a little different because he said he trains the day before, but if you're doing a three-day-a-week Texas Method, then the day before your intensity day, you want to be completely off. But yeah,
I do a little bit different stuff. So.
And if you have to push it back and change your week, just be adaptable. Like, the one day that's expendable in a three-day-a-week Texas Method is the light day. So if you just have to do a Monday volume day and then a Thursday intensity day and not have a light day, that's fine too. But basically, like, Andres, if he's not cognizant of it yet, he should know, like, how much his work day is going to affect him. He has to work and try and train the next day or even train the day of, he should know how much that's going to affect him. If he's going to have a dog shit intensity day workout after doing a full shift, then he should just wait till the next day, especially if he has that next day off. So there's a lot of factors that go into a lot of variables that if Andres was fucking talking to him, we could ask him questions and specify it. But be adaptable. Really try and focus on how you can improve your recovery. If you can't improve if you can't increase the time that you sleep, then how can you increase the quality? Can you black out your room? Can you decrease the temperature of the room? Can you take ZMA? Can you take fish oil? Can you take a Natricom magnesium citrate supplement? You know, can you take vitamin D when you wake up in the morning? Can you take a multivitamin in the morning? Can you hydrate better? Like, those are just simple recovery things that could have an effect on this kind of stuff. But I'd always come back with the Texas Method. People, even if they mean well and even if they've kind of even read stuff I've talked about on the website, I might say, like, how are you structuring your volume and intensity? Because if you're doing too much fucking volume, it's not going to work even if you're doing all this other stuff right. So take a look at the volume, ratchet it back if you need to, and then try and let that intensity go up. So I think that's going to be it for the first episode back of the 70s Big Radio Show. We've got Strongman coming up. Hopefully we get this episode out before it airs. We've got Worlds coming up. What week is
that? Weightlifting. That's this week, 3 days for World Weightlifting Championship in Poland.
And then we've got a strongman coming up. We got the worlds. Mike's got a wedding. I'm gonna play with my puppies.
Not my wedding.
He's not getting married. I'm gonna play with my puppies. Yeah, good episode, man. You guys may have heard some of the fucking connection issues as we're talking. Like we're gonna improve on all that stuff as we go on. But it wasn't too debilitating this episode. But just bear with us as we get used to doing the show, and we're gonna do our best to just get you information and entertain you. If it kind of the fucking technical difficulties come up, we'll fucking work around them because we don't know what we're doing anyway.
One last thing. On Tuesday, I'm going down to Dallas to train with Brent and Chris. We don't get to train together that often. Mainly, more than two of us don't. We hardly ever train together. So I'll try to get some video of the three of us. I think all of you guys, especially those that read Mobility Wad, like Brent's personality a lot. He's not very much different in real life. So I'll try to get some video from that training session. I'm sure it'll be a bloodbath.
Brent's website is Mopility Wad. That's MOPELITYWOD.com. It's always fun to read. You can get more 70s Big action at 70sbig.com. You can go to the Facebook fan page at facebook.com/70sbig. And you can always shout at us, sound off on the Twitter at 70sbig.com. I'm Justin Lasik.
I'm Mike Battalino.
And you're listening to 70s Big Radio.
See ya.